The album we released with the trio last year is called Seeing. And normally we build the concerts quite spontaneously. We never agree all the way beforehand what we will play. We just start somewhere, and it's the beauty of this trio that everyone knows the repertoire so well, and everyone is also very open to improvising new sections and interludes and developing the repertoire that way. But what normally happens these days is that we play stuff from the latest album and pieces from the previous album called Opening, and also stuff from all the way back into my first album. Plus new stuff. We try out material all the time while we are on the road. And so most probably there will be also new material never performed before.
This is very exciting. Testing music on live audience. We would love to be your guinea pigs. So there's more to look forward. But I know from a very reliable source that there will be people who have all of your albums out there. So it's for them that will be a musical feast.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, it's very touching, basically, that people actually know many of our compositions, and already when I start something, we're already connecting in a way with the listening history of several people in the audience, and an emotional connection that they might have to compositions, and that's makes me very grateful, and it's highly meaningful. Although, as I'm not an entertainer, so I play music first and foremost for the sake of music and for trying to make myself happy, but then to extend the circle and to realize that this approach also then has brought us lots of followers around the world. It's very, very touching.
This is quite incredible because you just answered the question I didn't have a chance to ask. Exactly, not an entertainer. That's on my notes. And my guess was that you could easily just play it for yourself and be as happy playing it alone.
Yeah, I guess for me the basic mode of playing is trying to play for myself as a listener, not trying to play what I have rehearsed or trying to show off how fast I can play or how advanced I can play, but trying to play what I would have wanted to listen to. And then you get this circle going between creating the music and taking it in. And then it's the same circle when the audience is there, it's just expanded and we are doing the journey together, so to speak.
It comes to you as natural as a breath, creating it, releasing it, and then taking another breath. It's the same for you with music.
Yeah, it's very natural, but it's not necessarily easy, because when you play music, it's very easy to get stuck, in trying to show off something, to get stuck in trying to do what worked well yesterday. And it's not always so that the same things work well in a new hall with a new piano, with a new emotional state, maybe. So it's about a radical openness for what sounds good here and now, and what would I like to hear here and now.
This is more or less what you talked about when you released Opening. You said opening yourself to be played by the greater forces. And exactly here and now, in this moment, could you please expand on that philosophy? Because I think it's essential. It defines your music through 3 years.
It's connected to a meditative approach to life, I guess, and and definitely to music. You connect with the huge vastness of the universe, but you channel it down here and now and try to live with maximum openness and also maximum clarity. You can very easily get confused, of course, as a human being and also as a musician, and you can very easily get frustrated by your own mistakes, by things that might not work out the way you thought they would. But the key is to take deep breaths and and let go, and then try to use those things that might seem like mistakes for something good, and try to see the potential in every situation instead of the blockages or the limitations.
Right now, I wasn't sure if it's only about music or about the general approach to life, because there is a very deep philosophy for living in this, what you've just said.
To me, life, prayer, meditation, music, it's part of the same, and the fundamental challenges are the same, for sure.
To anyone who has been to your concert, at least once, your concerts seem to be an antidote to the overstimulated world that we live in. And this is very challenging. Mm-hmm. How do you work on your attention span? Do you limit maybe the outside that comes to you? All the stimulus? Basically, how do you take care of your focus?
That's a very, very good question. Thank you. And a difficult question. The most important thing is to enter into music without reservations, with giving everything you have, giving your whole heart, giving your whole body and soul and your whole presence. And that's something I have worked my whole life for, and the other musicians have also done that. And it's something you're never done learning, that, because the challenges or the dangers for disturbances and the dangers for stiffness are always there. So you have to practice as many ways in the same way as a meditation practitioner. You are never done. It's a never-ending blessed state to enter into every day. In addition to that, of course, for me, it's not like I never use social media and never look at my phone when I'm in the plane or something, but I try to be very conscious of when to do it and to not get trapped in the stream of impressions, the stream of news, and the stream of, it's like in our days, the terrible news and the insignificant bullshit and the well-meant advices for life, they are just part of the same never-ending stream. And basically, you have to be the master of it. Of course, you cannot control the digital world completely, but you have to be the master of how you enter into it, how you take it in, and how you communicate with your digital devices. And that's what I'm doing with a soft discipline. I've not been a person saying never the phone before that. I've not been a person saying I have to practice the piano so and so many hours a day. I have to, but a soft discipline has always worked for me. So if I notice that I'm just scrolling without intention, then I basically stop. And if I notice that the terrible news of the world today are really making me feel helpless, I take a pause, because these news, if we go to them, they need to make us feel, okay, this is terrible. My job is to spread as much love as I can. My job is not to get discouraged and in despair. My job is to take it seriously, but then spread love. And if I notice that I cannot, then I take a break and I read some good poetry or pray instead.
Exactly. Prayer, this is more transcendent. But poetry, that's on my list as well, actually, because this is one of your inspirations. That's what I found, at least, and you can add a lot more to this, probably. But Norwegian poetry and Scandinavian folk songs are somehow in the basics of your compositions.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. My compositions, I would say they have at least three or four different sources, if you look at it from a musicologist standpoint or a music history standpoint. There are the lullabies and the chants of Norwegian folk music, and there is the whole Western canon of classical music, especially Impressionism and neoclassical composers, and Chopin is important to me. And then there is the hymnal tradition and the spirituals and gospel music that I also grew up with alongside the Norwegian tradition.
Hence
so these are always there.
Hence the tradition of singing, of playing with cathedral choirs, because that's also part of your musical experience.
Yeah, I grew up with church life, with a very open-minded, liberal church, and with church music being anything from very classical to gospel music to folk music-based hymns. And I'm very grateful for that upbringing, and I'm very grateful also for finding a way to staying in that spirit, so to speak, also with a liberal, open-minded ideology, so to speak, and a theology that is open to basically anything that the world has to offer, but still very much rooted.
If opening means open yourself to be played by greater forces, then what does seeing mean?
It means looking below or beyond the obvious to me. Opening up the landscape with intuition and with creativity and with seeing potential instead of seeing rigorous patterns. And that's how music can breathe and come alive, also without necessarily trying to do something that no one has done before, which is impossible in music, and trying to artificially break boundaries and play ugly music, when if your soul wants beauty, then beauty is what you should go for, but not prettiness, not sweetened beauty, but this deep, pure beauty. And to find that and to express that, you have to not only see the basic outlines of things, you have to sort of dig deeply into the potential of the visual field and of the auditive field. And I think that's a lot what it's about for me, the way to play together as a band, to not only see like this, but to see like this.
There is a notion around this.
Yeah, there is. And you have also, of course, in much meditation, an expression called the third eye, which is like supplementing what you can see with your normal vision, with a kind of intuitive, holistic grasping of any situation. And that's something that you can sometimes feel in a band, that you feel the intentions of the others, you know what they will play right before they do it, and you can intuitively see ways in the musical landscape that are creative and not obvious, but still very much the right ways. And that's a blessed feeling when you get there.
I can't stop smiling, and I'm getting goosebumps when you talk about it, because from the audience point of view, this is what we are waiting for. We really want to be part of that incredible connection. So, do you have, you and your trio, do you have some kind of maybe a ritual or some kind of a strict routine before the concert? Because this really requires incredible focus from all of you.
Yeah, it requires deep and wide focus. But it does not necessarily require that we use the same language for it, or that we are... We're not necessarily in line on how we talk about it, but we are very much in line on how we do it. So in this group, I'm the obviously spiritual person, because I use words like prayer and meditation. Two others, one is atheist, one is agnostic, and it still feels like we are practicing the same religion. And sometimes we can really talk about the interplay and go deep also with words, but most of the time we just say, yeah, let's play some good music, and then we go on stage and we prepare individually in different ways.
Right. But what you're saying about your band is a beautiful proof of human connection, that there is more than our beliefs, that there is something greater that connects all of us. What you just said made me think about all those older jokes, like a rabbi, a priest, and a non-believer go to a bar. So this is you, Ben. What happens?
They
have fun. Yeah. They connect anyway because they are people.
And although the drummer will say that he will not use a word like sacred about music, when he starts playing, you immediately feel that we share this sacred space. And it's about devotion for sure. Mm.
Two very important piles of your music. I think that you either are led by this one or another. One is melody and one is silence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. Regarding the first one, we are in a way as concerned with textures and shapes as any good free-form contemporary jazz band would be. But we happen to be first and foremost lyrical musicians and musicians concerned with good melodies. And so when we develop new compositions, the melody is always in the forefront, and cherishing the melody, serving the melody, so to speak, is our main ideology or our main task when we go on stage. And in that way, we are almost like a pop band. It's about making the melody shine, making the melody feel as if it's the most important thing in the world right here and now. Some jazz bands play melodies more like a point of departure for improvisation or an excuse to improvise. But for us, it's more the other way around. The melodies are the main focus, and then we do lots of freely improvised interludes, and we establish different layers in the musical textures, but they always come from this devotion to the melody and the willingness to serve the melody.
And there's silence on the other part of the spectrum.
Yeah, and then that's very true, because the gap or the space between the notes are just as important as the notes themselves. When you say something, it's very good if you let it have its space to actually work, to sink in and to be repeated in the mind of people you are talking with or the people you are playing music to. If you all the time fill the musical soundscape with more and more information, it's a bit like
a news channel.
Information overflow.
It's like a news channel.
It's a bit like that. And it is. And it's it very easily becomes then a situation where each note gets less significance. But it's not like our concerts are all the time only minimalism, but we always come from that. And the sections in our concerts where many notes happen at once are normally quite few. And then when we do it, we really do it. We can also sometimes go quite loud, but it's then part of a shape, a trajectory, where silence is the alpha and omega, in a way, where we come from and where we are going. And then intensity is built and colors are coming in and getting stronger and then again fading out. And this way of building musical shapes and building concerts, also not only individual songs, but the totality of songs put together spontaneously as almost a symphonic whole, is one of the most stimulating for me about playing music and playing live.
Is that also that secret ingredient of so-called Scandinavian jazz that we in Poland admire so much? The silence, the landscape, the space?
Maybe. I think, to me, coming from Scandinavia, the differences between the different bands coming out of here are more striking than the similarities. But I guess if you, on average, if you compare an average Scandinavian project with an average German and an average American jazz project, I guess we end up on 20-30% of the notes during the same time or something like that. And And why, I don't know, but it has to do with a kind of affinity for openness and stillness, or making everything count, trying to not say what you don't really mean, trying to say what matters and leaving out the rest. I think there's a certain affinity or a certain drive towards that among many musicians from Norway, at least.